Someone was once praised to Winston Churchill as being a humble man, and without missing a beat, Churchill said, well, he has much to be humble about. Which is sort of how I'm feeling right now. Thank you for your introduction and the honor of speaking to you, especially today. It was a beautiful morning. School had just begun. I'd had my kids in my room for about 3 days. We didn't know each other very well. We were summoned to an unexpected school meeting, and our headmaster told us that a jumbo jetliner had flown into one of the World Trade Center buildings, which was now on fire, and no one knew why. We went back to my classroom, turned on the radio, and my seventh graders and I listened as the second plane hit the second Trade Center, and we realized we were under attack. We listened for a while, we turned the radio off at some point, and my kids and I held hands around the room. My desks are arranged in a circle, so that was easy to do. And we prayed for the people who had died already and who would die, and who were dying at that moment. We had two new kids in the school, two new kids in my classroom, brown-skinned children from Pakistan. And it occurred to me at some point that it was going to become very difficult to be Muslim in America for a while. Now, understand something. There is no contest between religions. The contest is between ways of being religious. This is important to understand. The contest is not between religions. It is between ways of being religious. And 9/11 really showed that to us. We had suicide bombers willing to die to kill as many of us as they could. And on the same day, we had suicide policemen and firemen who were willing to die to save as many of us as they could. We had spirituality of both kinds happening right before our eyes, same day, same tragedy. It's important to take away that lesson. I got to know the girls really well. I asked their parents if they would get on TV with me and do a program of introducing our local Muslims to the Cape. And the parents found some other folks, and they got on TV. Within 2 days, we had a TV show going on local access cable. I asked my Muslim friends whether there was any potential conflict between Islam and living in the United States. And Dr. Shatari immediately spoke, and he said, this is why we came here. To live this way is why we came here. One of the other people was also a panelist, was also a doctor, and both of them at Falmouth Hospital, and she was stunned by how often her colleagues were dropping into her office to make sure that she was all right. Make sure she was all right. Tears welled up in her eyes, and we were on TV, and she was trying to find words to express what that meant to her. And finally she said, these people are better Muslims than me. You know, you hear people, Christians use this term all the time, a certain kind of behavior is very Christian. And here she was reaching for something that she could describe this kindness with, and that was what she came up with. These people are more Muslim than me. The contest is not between religions, it is between ways of being religious, between seeing doctrinal purity as the object for everything versus compassion as the object for everything. Practice compassion every day, and God will teach us all the theology we need. I've really come to believe that, and I'll offer that to you first thing. What I want to talk to you about, with you about for a minute here, is something that's been worrying me, been on my mind for some time. I gave the titles of this little talk, One Country, which is, after all, what we say we believe in, and what we say we want. One country, e pluribus unum. Out of many, one. That does not describe us today. Does not begin to describe us today at all. We are headed in quite the opposite direction. From out of one, many. And we're departing from each other's company and each other's love with tremendous anger and a righteous conviction that we deserve to feel the anger we're feeling, and they deserve to get it. It's more destructive, it will be more destructive to this country than the victory of either a Republican or a Democrat in November. I really want you to believe that. What is happening to us, the separation between us, the widening separation between us, is more dangerous to this country than the victory of any politician who could possibly be running it. That's the most important thing. You could ask what's happening to make this problem as severe as it is and to accelerate it as it does. Several things. One, we have, when I was a kid, the TV stations, well, there were only three of them, and they turned off. You had the Late Show, and then they played the national anthem, and a test pattern came on the screen, and that was that. Go to bed. Turn off your TV. That's not bad advice now. Turn off the TV sometimes. Shut down the cell phone sometimes. Talk to people. Talk to your neighbors. Find out who they are. Because there's such a thing as too much media. Now, I'm old enough to know that. The kids I teach, not so sure. But turn off the media and get to know each other. That's actually part of the recipe here. Second, a lot of modern psychology, modern brain research has taught us a whole lot about how the human mind works. And that new information has been added to information offered to us by Joseph Goebbels, by Adolf Hitler, and by people who first studied this in the 1930s, because there was a tremendous project in Germany for these people who hung out in beer halls and had big plans for their country. They realized quickly enough that they weren't going anywhere. And then they got this huge idea in their heads. Perhaps the only way to win was to change the character of the entire German people into something nastier, into something nasty enough that people with their philosophy would have a chance of winning. It was a huge idea, and they pulled it off. And they wrote letters to each other, which they never published, and we only found out after the war, sharing their thoughts about how they were actually going about doing that. That stuff is all public record. It's all available to us now. And modern brain research only accelerates the effectiveness of it. Because part of what we found is that human beings are animals. And as animals, we are very reactive to fear. We were animals. When the birds stopped chirping, when a twig snapped in the forest, when a low growl came out of the underbrush, you stopped. And your entire mind went to finding out what that was and immediately deciding what you needed to do about it. A whole lot of our nervous system and our intelligence can be taken over very, very quickly by fear. So politicians have gotten really good at it, and the world is certainly a nasty enough place that we have lots of rational things to be afraid about. We're being convinced that we need to be afraid of each other. We need to be afraid of each other. And that's toxic. And that's at work now. Also, there's a huge human drive for meaning. It's a basic need like sex and food and protection. And it's not given enough credit. I've done a fair amount of research trying to figure out why people join ISIS. Why did people join these outfits that put these guys on the planes on September 11th? What were they looking for? And what we're finding is that in many cases with ISIS and the information we've got now, a lot of the people joining ISIS were not good Muslims, actually had never read the Quran, many of them knew very little about the religion, and that meant they were susceptible to being told what Islam meant, but hungry for meaning in their lives. Consider third world countries where the median age is 17, unemployment is 60%, socially conservative cultures where you don't date, you don't get to hang out with women unless you marry, and you will never marry if you don't have a job, and unemployment is 60%. It makes you meaningless. Nobody wants you. And then a radical imam tells you what God wants you. God has a plan. Are you willing to lay down your life to bring religious purity to the planet, that the banner of Islam will wave over planet Earth? Are you willing to die for God. And another way to put it is this: are you willing to die if necessary that your life might have meaning? And the answer is yes. Yes. And it's September 11th we saw that. The firemen, the policemen who ran up into those buildings, and many of them must have known that they might never get out alive. And they ran up to save people. Their lives have meaning. One of the factors to talk about here is the polarization of wealth in America is leaving more and more people marginalized all the time. And that marginalization means if nobody wants you, your life doesn't have meaning. Where do you get that? Well, saving America from Hillary Clinton or saving America from Donald Trump might be just the ticket. But for that to kick in, for that to be meaningful, you have to be convinced that the other guys represent the forces of darkness, that they're evil, that they don't love their country like you do, and that America needs to be saved from them. If they can be the forces of darkness, then in resisting them, you become the forces of light. And that's powerful stuff. It's intoxicating. We can become adrenaline junkies, addicted to our own anger, to our own outrage. And we're seeing that in the country now. So the question is, what do we do? Well, we're in church, which is not a bad start. We have to love each other. Every religion that makes compassion its God tells us so. We have to love each other. We have to have compassion for each other. And we have to bring that into our politics. We have to change the way we do it. We have to change the way we think about it. I'm a Democrat. If you've read my column, you probably know that by now. Okay. Having dinner with someone I loved not long ago, one of the people at the table basically said that anyone who is for Trump was obviously a bigot and a homophobe. Now, I'm not voting for Donald Trump, but we can't think that way. We can't talk that way. Not about Hillary, not about Trump. We can't go there. Good people of goodwill have differing opinions, always have. That argument has always been part of this country. And I'm teaching American history at school, and I'm telling my kids, I don't want you to just study history, I want you to make history. I want you to be the people who go out there and change this place for the better. Every one of you has the capacity to do that. And you too. A little old for my classroom, but that's all right. Meaning. It's not enough. I don't care what the, I mean, I do care. Answering all the questions is not the point of history. It is the prerequisite for using history in your life mission. Changing this for the better. That's the mission. I have an old friend that I grew up with, and he was a Philadelphia gymnastics all-around champion in high school, an amazing athlete, a good guy, a good friend. He became an evangelical Christian, and when he did, in his 30s, he became convinced that I was going to hell. There was no triumph in that for him. It's great sadness, actually. He felt frustrated because he couldn't save me from my own theology. He knew I was a writer, and with the sort of binary logic that his approach to religion took him, he said, well, Larry, look, either you're leading people to Jesus or you're leading them away from him. What can I tell you? So eventually we drifted apart. I kept trying to contact him. Once in a while he'd contact me. And finally, last summer, we agreed, I would drive down to Pennsylvania, and he had a business trip to Pittsburgh, and I'd jump in the car and I'd go with him. I had no idea how it was going to go. Got in the car, it was pouring down rain, we drove out of his driveway, and he said, look, Larry, we're getting old. I don't want to fight with you anymore. I just want to know you. I just want to know why you think the way you do. And I hope that you would be willing to have the same questions about me. I couldn't hug him because we were driving, but we spent the next 2 days and nights, meals, when he wasn't making business calls, just catching up. Now, I know he's going to vote for Trump, and he knows I'm going to vote for Hillary, and that hasn't changed. And in fact, we weren't trying to change each other's minds about anything, and that's important. That's what I'm recommending to you. Part of our way out of our growing national hatred for each other is to stop trying to change each other's minds and start trying to know each other. What's your backstory? What happened to you growing up? Who were your mentors? Who were your teachers? What did they teach you? That's all. How did you become you? Because if you know the answers to those questions, you'll know why they're voting for Hillary or why they're voting for Trump. It has nothing to do with changing their minds. It has to do with loving them. It has to do with loving them. You've got to want to know their backstory. You have to care. Do that, and in November, we'll disagree. We will vote for different people. And we'll be all right. And we'll be all right if we can be neighbors to each other. And so I'm recommending to you to try something really difficult. Sit down with take a Democrat to lunch. Take a Republican to lunch. Give yourselves more time than lunch to do it in. And I'll offer you two questions. These are two that we did in a program that the Interfaith Coalition did after the Bush-Gore election, which was pretty divisive itself. We did an event called Healing the Body Politic, and we did it at the community college. And we invited people, and a good crowd turnout, to sit in small groups and wrestle with two questions, one after the other. Question one, what is it about people like me that I wish people like you understood, but don't? What is it about people like me that I wish people like you understood, but don't? Tell them. And then let them tell you. So you're a Republican. You're sitting down with a Democrat. What do you wish they understood about Republicans that Democrats just don't seem to get? Tell me. Question two. What are you afraid would happen if the other side wins? What are you afraid will happen if the other guys win? Tell me. Tell them what you're afraid of. They're not professional politicians. Nobody's putting money in their pockets. They're just neighbors. They'll probably tell you the truth. If a Democrat says to a Republican, look, we're really not trying to take your guns away. Honest to God, we're worried about gun control. We'd like to have a little more control over who can buy one and what kind it is. But we're not trying to take your, honest to God, we're not trying to take your guns away. Turn off the TV. Turn off your cell phone. Listen to your neighbors. What is it about them that they wish you knew that you don't? Listen to them. Let them tell you. Ask them to tell you. What are you afraid of that'll happen if they win? Tell them. Maybe they'll reassure you a bit. And it won't necessarily be policy, but it will be about intention, about character. We're becoming convinced that that 40% of the country doesn't even love America anymore. That they're sympathetic with the enemy, that they have some soft spot for Islamic terrorism. That's the toxic part, is the fear that your neighbor doesn't even love the country anymore, doesn't have the values anymore. That's where you can help each other, by talking to each other. We have to. We absolutely have to. I'll tell you, we cannot practice politics as a dark art and arrive in a bright place. In the end, we will have to live in the country we have made. E pluribus unum.